assumes that the state is interested in getting involved in rural health care. Shouldn't we have some more motivational why the state should get involved? I mean, this has limitations on...
Well, this is pretty good motivation.
What? Well, can't the state just say, well, we don't provide anybody, yeah, I mean, we're really not in the business of providing anybody any primary health care, and why should we get involved in the rural areas? Isn't that the problem, is motivating the legislature to actually say, we've got a big problem, there's going to be all kinds of stress in terms of cutback of enormous amounts of funds for the villages, and including health care, and isn't that a big issue? Aren't we kind of assuming too much, like the state really wants to get in and do the job now, and this gives a rationale for doing it?
We could be. I sort of view the fact that the legislature has funded this study as an indication that they're very concerned about the problem, and that we are to tell them how to be concerned. We're to tell them what their policies should be, but maybe we should spend more time developing a statement about that reluctance and why it should change.
Well, has the state, I think, does the state have any stand right now? Has it made any statement about whether it even cares?
No, there has never been a comprehensive health plan. There are several annual health plans that come out of the department. The legislature has never taken that stand. It's piecemeal. I think most of you know that. We fund programs as we deem necessary, and mostly through extensive lobby from certain sections of the state because they have a need. For instance, the otitis media problem. I have put money in otitis media because there has been a strong interest in that particular health need. Last year, we didn't hear anything about otitis media, so there was no money in otitis media. But the year before that and the year before that, I sponsored bills to go to provide funds for otitis media. You know, these are just things that you put money in programs that have some kind of interest. But I would like to address some of the issues that were brought up by Bill Dan, and that is, you know, are we the marketability of this of healthcare? What, how are we? You know, maybe I misunderstood what he meant. But one of the things that is happening in the state is that, you know, we don't market healthcare. We are not. I'm not talking about competing with the private sector. I'm talking about in your area of healthcare. There's not enough lobbying effort, and if there is, it's not as extensive as others. And that's probably why it's not getting as much attention. And again, I repeat, the reason for our gathering here is to provide that kind of input that is really absolutely necessary. And in talking with Gordon, and Gordon can speak for himself, he just told me that other members of the legislature are very much interested in this, and that it will be one of the major issues that will come up. I am very glad that my colleagues from the rural areas are beginning to be very supportive, because in the past, they have always said they're very much interested in healthcare, but they really have not spent as much time. But perhaps this advisory committee will come up with some real positive and realistic recommendations that we can address. Sometimes we come up with some very idealistic things, including myself, you know, something I want to do it now, why wasn't it done last year or 10 years ago? And somehow we have to be realistic, and I've come to a point where realism has, and being pragmatic is the order of the day, rather than thinking of the big deals that never really materialize. Okay, Denny?
No, I think our process is correct here. I don't think we really need to speak to the state health department per se, and we shouldn't confuse the department with the policies of the state. And I think our approach is, I think this process is the way to go. It's going to be a process of getting the legislature interested in that. You know, they, after all, set the nitty-gritty policy for departments.
But I think the question is valid. I think right now there's some confusion in people's minds about what is the nature of the state's policy relating to health. Obviously, in the past, they've become involved in communicable diseases and certain other types of things. But I don't think there's any clear-cut policy on whether or not the state wishes to get involved in healthcare financing, access to healthcare in certain areas that don't have it. the state has been handling it on a sort of bill-by-bill basis. They'll fund a project here and one there and that sort of thing, but I don't think there's any consistent policy on what responsibility, what is the nature of the state's responsibility relative to health. Do they want to limit it to communicable diseases and that sort of thing? Do they want to expand into healthcare financing such that everybody in the state of Alaska, for example, such as your bill, expressed that there would be some sort of uniform coverage for health care? Then there's the other issue of access. Does the state want to get into that? So I think the nature of the state's policy relating to health care should be fairly well spelled out, and I think that's a really important first step, because if that's spelled out, then the steps taken to implement that policy will be relatively clear-cut. Because, you know, you have to know which direction you're going to go to find out how you're going to get there.
See, the state could say that the state is already providing equal protection, in that it's gotten involved historically with traditional public health issues, such as communicable diseases. Huh? Well, as David Case pointed out in his paper, this was almost racist because it was providing things to protect the white population from these communicable diseases, and it took for granted the fact that the white population had private medical care available to it, which the natives didn't. In other words, that whole policy has come under a lot of criticism. Now, whether the state should get involved in other non-traditional public health issues, you know, such as providing private health care, that's a whole new policy. And how many states are doing that? You know, getting in there and saying that we've got a vested interest in getting primary health care out to the villages, you know, as a state concern. And that's something new, I think, and innovative. And I think if it's the studies going to propose that thing, we better have some rationale to do it. In other words, saying it's going to be much more economical if the state puts in, you know, invests in primary health care in the rural areas.
There's one issue, too. I think we better just go back over real quickly. And we spent a lot of time discussing whether or not the energies of this group and the staff should go into formation of a policy or the development of specific legislative actions. And I think came to the conclusion that the time and energy could be better spent coming up with specific legislative actions, which would in themselves become policy, as opposed to trying to develop a policy statement to be approved by the legislature and then deciding how to implement it at a later time. So I guess in the final analysis, our policy will be whatever we manage to get done next year. Does that make sense?
Well, I think that's a real important first step, because if it's a policy of the state to provide access to health care in rural areas, then questions of facility financing, hospital construction, that sort of thing, become a lot easier for the legislature to deal with, because they've already accepted that responsibility. Then the question of whether to fund a hospital at Nome or Bethel or some other place, and maybe those are two bad examples, Dillingham, become a lot easier for them to deal with, because it's already their policy to support that type of activity. Then it becomes a financial priority matter and not a basic question, should we even do it in the first place? So I think we should direct our energies, as far as the committee is concerned. My recommendation would be to developing a policy statement in the form of legislation, if that's the best way to handle it. Describing what the state, what is the nature of the state's responsibility relative to health, and specify that.
Bill?
I guess what everybody's saying is that Luann needs to add to her list some definition of state policy or responsibility. In other words, we've said equal protection, and we've said it's a partnership, and we've said all these things, but we haven't said that one of the policy considerations is, what is the state going to define its responsibility to be? Is it going to be, you know, catastrophic? Is it going to be accessibility? Is it going to be first dollar? Is it going to be last dollar? I mean, all those things need somewhere to get defined as a first step. And Thelma, what I was really talking about marketplace was, you know, Reagan's approach nationally is to say, we're not going to have this regulatory approach. We're not going to have a Medicare program that's highly regulated. We're simply going to give people dollars or coupons, and it's out to them to go find in the marketplace their health care. Is that the approach we're going to take? Are we going to contract? Are we going to open it up to the private medical community? Are we instead going to keep some sort of, as a policy approach, maintain some sort of separate delivery system under the viewpoint that the private sector is not going to really be able to provide on a continuing basis these special services that are unique in the Indian Health Service system? So there are a lot of design policy considerations that will have obvious political repercussions. And those are probably premature to delineate at this time, but those are the kind of things I was getting into.
I think it has been brought out, though, that some of those national consideration for any kind of delivery system are not exactly compatible with existing facilities in the rural areas. I mean, voucher right. system, you don't even have too many choices. So how can you even, you only have one choice sometimes or no choice at all. So
right.
that we cannot even address.
You know, I think what we're talking about illness, we're not talking about health right now. We're talking about accessibility to when you get sick. And I don't know what direction, you know, we want to go. Do we want to define health or do we want to define illness? And the Indian Health Service is good at dealing with illness. I don't know if we're very good at dealing with health, to be very honest. Okay. Maybe I better.
John's taking notes.
Oh, yeah. John, I didn't say it. I don't tell Derek.
Nobody's ever lost his usual
worry about
anything else. Stay tippy-toed into it. Well, we're dealing with, if you're dealing with health, it's a whole different issue than dealing with illness, I think. And we're good at dealing with illness. We can, if there's somebody that's gotten hurt out in the village, we can get them in here. Okay, but I think health is a different issue, and we may need to define when we're talking about health. Okay, and if that's the way we want to go.
It sounds to me like what you're saying leads up to, you know, something we'll be talking about in a couple of minutes in terms of specifically how can we implement these kinds of things. If the role of Indian Health Service is to deal with illness and the role of the state to deal with is to deal with health, that's like saying that the role of Indian Health Service is to deal with primary care and the role of the health of the state is to deal with preventive kinds of care. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of responsibilities are the type of thing that need to be spelled out. They need to be coordinated and they need to be spelled out. And that's, you know, where we're coming from in some kind of a negotiation form.
In the ideal world, they should be together. And they are together because there's no way you can do primary care without telling a person how to prevent this kind of stuff. Or you shouldn't do it if you're doing some quality work, okay? But it gets all screwed up sometimes in the world of reality as opposed to the ideal world. You know, we all should, as primary providers, we all should be doing preventative medicine.
Get screwed up.
And we've had major problems in the hospital dealing with a preventative medicine program because people have objected to that, saying that we are all doing that. Yet we are very good. We've been trained in illness and not in health. Okay, and I don't know, you know, I agree with you. That's the kind of thing that we need to get involved with.
And it could be that the people that are actually providing the care are doing both. And to the consumer, you know, it is a very interrelated thing. But who's going to pay for it, who's responsible for ensuring that service is out there may need to be separate. I don't know. I'm not saying it has to be. I'm just saying that, you know, that's the type of thing that would need to be spelled out in a negotiation forum.
When you're in the war zone, though, you can't do preventative stuff. I mean, it's
right.
a war out there.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, I've been there, you know, at times, and you can't start dealing with prevention because you can't even take care of that. That's what's there. And so, technically, sometimes, practically, you've got to separate it out.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you won't be thinking that when these people get sucked into to the battle.
Okay,
my assumption is that during this whole discussion this morning is that we've been talking about, for the most part, medical care. We've not mm-hmm. been talking about preventive care, but that doesn't argue against urging the state in our development of a policy to have a policy on health and a definition of health. Just that we're talking about shrinking federal resources and the need for the delivery of specialized services in the hinterlands, I think we're talking about medical care for the most part, medical services.
We certainly have looked, you know, a long way beyond that in terms of some of the preliminary work that we've done. I think as you're, you know, it's the same process you're going through, we've been through, and that is, if we start to develop a healthcare policy for the legislature, It's a very time-consuming and very complicated process, and it's going to probably be fairly predictable. I think you could all kind of guess pretty much would be all-encompassing, and it probably wouldn't tell a legislator in December what he needs to do and how much it's going to cost next year and the year after. But the ongoing process of developing the policy probably should continue. And it's just a kind of a tough problem to get back to it again and do it again. You know, the state's already involved in environmental health, and it's involved in housing, and it's involved in village safe water programs and emergency medical services.
And promotion.
And promotion. So, you know, you could say that, you know, it already has a strong presence in prevention. You know, is it a very effective presence? Well, that's another question. Same with public health nursing. So those things go on and on and on. And again, we've chosen, I guess, to deal with those by trying to come up with some specific actions in those functional areas and kind of letting the policy take care of formation of itself. But if that's inappropriate.
Bill?
I can't leave the discussion we were having a back and forth about the voucher system. There's an awful lot of misunderstanding. Dick, you will remember the hearings we had on the Alaska hospital acquisition question. I think what very few members of the private sector understand, and what very few members probably of the legislature understand, is a very unique relationship between the Alaska Native Medical Center as a referral center and the outlying system. And I think in order to educate people before the debate starts, we need to delineate in our background papers what that relationship is. I think there are a lot of people in the private sector who think if we simply give a voucher, you know, to somebody in EMOC, an internist is going to go out and punch the voucher and collect his money, and that's all well, and that they'll go out, if the financing's out there, they'll go out and provide it without any knowledge of the system considerations, the training of paraprofessionals, the working through those people, continuity of records, all of those things. So I think in our descriptions of the systems that I guess Dick will be doing, that kind of special relationship needs to be spelled out. Because there will be some who will say, this is bananas. You're taking this away from the private sector when we can meet all the needs of the state.
Which they've already been saying.
I think also, I don't know, maybe you don't agree with me, but I don't see, you know, in the 2 years that I've been working in the legislature, I don't see a whole lot of movement there to set up a voucher system. I see that movement on the federal level in D.C.
Yeah.
And Marianne Simpson, you know, Stephen's aide, brought that home again. One of the things she said to me was she cautioned the group against making any kind of major sweeping change in the system, which of course none of this is, but making any kind of major thing. Because the voucher plan and the elephant stocking bill, she thinks, may become a real issue in the House in the next couple of years as people see, you know, the budget cutbacks coming down and what that really means, that we may move over to that kind of system. But, you know, that's just speculation. I don't see any real movement towards that in the legislature.
No, but I mean, that may well be the position of the Medical Association.
Right.
Is the reason I bring it up.
Right,
yeah.
Counteract.
Okay. When I hear this from the commissioner, I think we've all heard her talk about, well, we get $79 million come in, to serve 63,000. That's over $1,000 per person. Give you $1,000, you can buy your health care. But that, I think this is where the commissioner's office has been headed and maybe still is headed. And it's not a practical thing, and there's no place to buy your, to spend your voucher.
Well, that will be the position paper probably that we'll see next session. But again, there is a difference. I'm not so carried with the voucher system, in any voucher system, because I'm not fully aware of what it really does, but my gut reaction is that I don't really think it is the way to go at this point. They might have to convince me otherwise, but my initial feeling about it is it's not a very practical thing for the state. Not just in health delivery system, but even in the lunch program, they're talking about vouchers. So that kind of. But I think that we should define it exactly, and maybe this committee can come up with some recommendations in that area should the issue comes before the legislature next session or next couple of years while we are dealing with that issue in Washington.
Okay. Awesome. I assume we're talking about the individual who gets the health services, and we're going to emphasize that. You know, we need to be careful as to where we're looking at things. Is it going to be the provider from the provider standpoint, from a consumer standpoint, and from other kinds of standpoint? I guess we're talking about actually the health delivery to that individual, and it has to deal with the perception of his care, but also in the quality of care that he's getting at that level. And I assume that's where I'm coming from.
I think we have to recognize, Doctor, the real limitations of our medical system. You brought up the thing about the healthcare, you know, the medical industry we have is really oriented towards disease and not towards health. Well, that's true not just of IHS, but, you know, the medical industry of Western healthcare. You know, the doctors have gotten themselves into a real bag because they've emphasized so much drugs and surgery. And that's it, you know? And they've really been interested in that thing about disease. To go into the questions of whether or not the health care delivery system should go beyond that and offer a holistic kind of a thing, I think we're out there just to put out the fires now and to get basic disease kind of coverage to the, whatchamacallit, and the fine-tuning, you know, such a problem, you know, in other words, of going from disease care to health delivery. You know, I don't think it's something we can really address, or if people really know how to do that. How do you get doctors to be more concerned about diet, nutrition, and all that kind of stuff? And how do you get those people? You know, we don't have those answers. You know, the medical system is really good at sewing up an arm and giving inoculations, you know, for things we have cures for, and that's what we want to get out there. And those other problems about helping people with their diets and sugar and alcohol consumption and everything else. You know, can we really address that?
I got tired of the fire. I became a psychiatrist. I became a child psychiatrist. And, you know, you need to begin when you're... Well, it needs to begin in the medical school. I mean, if you want to go to that whole broad issue of that, you know, I mean, there's just a whole systems change that you want to get involved with. But that's a monumental issue.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The thing that's going to change those kind of systems is where the money is going to be too, and what kind of emphasis is going in. It's an economic issue. Yeah. It's not really.
You might be right. Maybe it's time to get in there and get the state to make a policy about health is, you know, healthcare versus disease care.
Unfortunately, it is. Maybe some people think, but that's the way the real world is. Yeah. You know.
Well, I think that what Dick has suggested earlier, the fact that some of these policy issues. Could only be policy issues if they were funded. It is a matter of finances, and I think that is a reality to all of us. We can talk a lot about how it should be, but you know, what gets funded is what it is. Actually, I shouldn't be that way, but it is. So, if Luann is finished with
that, I was just going to say that if you think that, you know, this is enough for now. We can just sort of put these aside. We're not getting rid of them. We're just saying, let's look at some specific kinds of actions that we could take. And then when we're done with that, we'll come back and decide whether or not we want to have a statement to the legislature, more than just an introduction to our recommendations that would cover these kinds of issues. If you want an actual statement and you want to make a recommendation that the legislature should implement that statement through legislation, that type of thing we can talk about later on.
Sure. Before you get off of that, another one came up. I think there have been some discussion here that's been tippy-toeing around an assumption or a basis for a policy that I think has been left off there, and that is that the state, and I'm stating it negatively, not by purpose, but the state should have a policy, or the state policy should be such that it does not deny individuals rights, particularly rights of free choice. And I think that's a valid assumption or criteria that should be applied to any state policy that's developed relating to health. And I think that's one that we've kind of missed here. Bill sort of brought it up when he talked about the voucher system, where people would have a broader choice of providers with that type of system, even though administratively it may not be the best in the world, but I think it points out a very basic issue that should be a part of any state policy.
Yeah, for instance, there's not free choice under Medicaid to a certain extent now, where Medicaid will pay for travel to a non-federal provider, but not to a federal provider in some instances. And that's an example where the preference of the patient is not honored. Mm-hmm. So I think it is a good issue.
And restrictions on the native use of insurance.
Right.
Okay. Let's move on then. Now we can come back to this a little bit later, or we can, as we go on.
Well, we're not moving on very far. Where are we? In this outline for staff presentation, what we have under Roman numeral number 2, discussion of potential legislative actions. And I think how we wanted to structure this, just for our own benefit, sort of assist us in using our time well, we thought we'd just break it down arbitrarily into three kind of major issues, and that's large changes or significant changes in the health delivery system. Of course, recognizing anything we do will make some change in the health delivery system. But kind of a timeless approach where these things can happen this year, next year, the following year, whatever. There are system changes that should take place and things that we should consider. And we should probably go through the various alternatives that we have for the next few years in terms of legislative actions that would make major changes in the system without ignoring other more direct actions which would also have make changes in the system. Then I think we wanted to talk again about something that isn't necessarily tied in the next fiscal year, and that is what can the state's response be to specific kinds of health status problems and specific functional areas that have been identified as problems through the interview process and through all the health plans, transportation, environmental health, emergency medical services. And we thought we'd go through and try and come up with 4 or 5 alternatives after we talk about defining those particular problems, and just discuss those alternatives among us and talk about and see if we can shift and sift them down a little bit into the formation of some kind of potential state action. Not that it will necessarily make it into a recommendation, but it will help us sort of prioritize these things and decide where the emphasis should be and what kinds of things are realistic. And again, strictly for discussion purposes. But then we wanted to hold out some more current issues, and that is the budgetary problems that are going on right now and are anticipated for next year, and what kinds of actions the legislature can take in relationship to those particular budgetary problems. One of those things would certainly be there's lack of itinerant visits, something that's been mentioned over and over again, and then the relationship between that and the public health nurses and providing primary care in the villages. You know, is it a problem? If it is, you know, what can the state do anything about it? Should the state do anything about it? And if so, what are the range of alternatives that the state could engage in that would somehow or other alleviate that? And that includes the CHR program, which you probably all know by now has ostensibly been cut. We want to then talk about FY82 budget cuts and the kinds of things the state might do in short-term sort of a situation, and then these future budget cuts that look like maybe 12% next year and so on and so forth. And we want to talk a little bit, too, about health manpower and nonprofit management training and various kinds of things like that that are sort of timely issues and things that we need to address. Is everyone comfortable with kind of going on that kind of a format? It's very much off the wall, but something we just kind of thought of for our own organization. Okay, then really the first thing I think we want to talk about is just sort of have an open discussion on financing mechanisms. And certainly in our data collection effort to date, the way that healthcare is financed in the rural areas for native healthcare has been mentioned as a very, very significant problem. It cuts across all the rest of the problems, but it's some elements which are unique to the financing situation. Certainly one of the biggest complaints that we've heard to date is the way Indian Health Service deals with regional health corporations and supplier, if you will, contracts for health providers. That includes contract care for natives to non-regional corporation providers. One of the questions we've been kicking around recently is, what is the financial responsibility of the state towards native healthcare or towards any kind of rural healthcare, and can we make some kind of inroad into what that financial responsibility is or isn't? There seems to be a lack of any kind of definition of what sort of financial responsibilities the state has for certain kinds of healthcare. Some things they've assumed in terms of medical, emergency medical service, some things they've left apart. Then again, we want to talk about non-native consumers in the bush areas that don't have any kind of coverage and make a, you know, have a very significant impact on the Indian Health Service programs. Some of them pay, some of them don't pay, and in places like Faro, it can be a very significant problem. And it's a very timely one, and it's something I think we want to discuss separately. Is that the kind of thing that the legislature can do something about? And if so, what kind of alternative actions can we come up with? And again, another issue that's been brought up over and over again, and this list I'm reading from is one that's been done by Lou Ann and Bill and myself, but has some issues that are a little unusual. But one of the things that we've been hearing quite a bit about is, if the state's going to be involved in financing health care for natives, then natives should pay for it in at least one portion or another. And why can't these services have sliding fee scales and so on and so forth? So there's, again, back to where's the responsibility for financing these things? It's a very difficult problem to define, and if we can kind of come up with a couple of basic conclusions to work from, it might be helpful. Some of the things that have been suggested to begin to make some sort of changes in the financing system are, of course, opening up House Bill 41, cost sharing to everybody, regardless of who their prime source of health care is. That's something that we may want to discuss here. Another suggestion that was made by Senator Stevens' office was simply for the state to loosen up the GR Med guidelines and take up the slack that way. There's another option that we can discuss. Another thing that the state could do would be to contract...
What are the GR Med guidelines? I'm sorry.
The General Medical Relief Guidelines. Now,
basically eliminated emergency.
Right, but it's grown into a very large program, and it's gone way beyond that in reality, and that might be a mechanism. Sorry, I'm not reading my own writing, so you're going to have to bear with me a minute.
Yeah, another issue, though, is if we start talking about, right as you talk about financing, unless something's changed, at least this year, I believe, instead of what was intended under the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, as I read it, was to utilize Medicare and Medicaid monies to expand the program. Essentially, a $30 million trade-off was made this year with no program expansion. And as we get into this, if that continues to happen, you still won't have any program expansion, any increased delivery capability, and you got a further deterioration of the program.
That's correct. Does anybody else have any more comments about that?
Yeah. I get the feeling that with the kind of statements you're making, that we are going to make the assumption the state feels its policy should be in direct care. If we're looking at taking up slack in because of the budgetary cuts in IHS, would then make the policy we just discussed, something seems backwards here.
Well, we're talking about
now assuming that we're going to tell the state, or the state's going to take the attitude that they're in the business of primary care, if only by subsidizing it.
Well, I think the financing mechanism is very different than actually providing primary health care. I think what Luann wanted to get across there was, unanimously, the people we've talked to have said it would be a very big mistake for the state to get involved in hiring doctors and nurses any more than they already are, and going out and providing care in state-run clinics and that kind of thing.
It's kind of unrealistic to assume if you're not holding the purse strings, you're not holding a lot of pull at the same time.
That's true.
If you're running the money, then you're going to have a large, large say in who gets it, who gives care, how it's given. So you really have to come back to what is the general policy going to be, because you're holding the purse strings.
Not only do you have a say, you have the responsibility to use that money adequately and appropriately, I think. Indian Health Service has not done that. Many times they've just given the money and not seen how it's been dealt with. And there's major criticism about that and doing that. And I think if there's money going to be given, then how that money is used certainly have to be addressed too, if it's appropriate for the reasons why it was given.
Danny?
I have a question for folks here who have worked in the Indian Health Service and who work there, relating something somewhat to what Ken was saying about the lack of ability of the existing system to expand to meet expand and need. What happens, you have a certain amount of money for contract care now in the state. What happens when a new area opens up, say a new major delivery system like is being anticipated over Mountain Village with the development of a sub-regional clinic there serving 8 or 10 or 12 villages in the lower Yukon, and there is no, I understand the Rincon decision was supposed to equalize somewhat the distribution of monies inside the Indian Health Service, but do you have the mechanism currently to pick up new delivery capability and like Mountain Village?
There's two problems that you point out. One of them is, you know, the addition of additional funds to cover additional services provided through a improved access system. And, you know, I think everybody's discussed that. You can see what's happening to federal budgets. But the other question I think that you bring up is probably one that's a little more difficult to deal with, and that is Indian Health Service has funds that are distributed to it in the so-called line item budgeting system. And it's very difficult for IHS to change that. In other words, if in that instance it would be appropriate to switch funds from certain direct activities into so-called contract funds to deal with that type of situation. We don't have the ability to do that.
You this can't is take funds from
no.
the Canic Clinic and shove it over to Mountain Village or from
that you
Billy
can do.
Nauer.
That you can do, but
only
you can't.
With a fight.
But you can't take funds. I mean, legally you can do it. Administratively, I'm not talking about politically. But administratively, you can't take funds that are used for direct clinic and hospital operation and put it into contract health services. Now, this is one thing.
I don't agree with you.
It's a reprogramming question.
Does exist under the CBA process.
I just did it.
Well, you didn't
let me finish,
Ken. But legally, IHS, in order to make that financial transfer within the IHS accounting system, has to go back to Congress to ask for reprogramming. But what I was going to say was that the health corporations have provided a mechanism that can be accomplished to answer.
But that's also not quite accurate.
There are some difficulties in
Congress has given the Indian Health Service 5%. You're going to start getting our dirty linen here.
It's all on tape. I was just indicating that maybe we should steer you away from hearing your dirty linen.
No, but I mean,
go ahead. I think
Congress has given the Indian Health Service some flexibility to move money. And this is an issue that I've, you know, been raising for a long time. What happens is that the Indian Health Service, Congress says to the Indian Health Service, you can move 5% of your money between categories, and we won't squawk. OMB, or the department then says to the Indian Health Service, you can move 5% of your money, and we won't squawk. Indian Health Service then says to the areas, you can move 5% of your money, and we won't squawk. Area then says to the service unit, you can move 5% of your money. What's happening is that when it gets down to the level of the individual contractor, even the individual area, you're not moving 5%. You're moving something percent. And I'd maintain you can give a hell of a lot more flexibility nationally at the local level and still cover your tail end nationally within a 5% flexibility. You don't have to just blindly pass down 5% all the way down the line. Congress is given 5% authority. That is to say, but it's always expressed as percentage. If it's expressed as you've got authority to move $5 million, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
And if they really had the mechanism in their financial management structure to monitor the changes, then they could do it a different way with a lot more flexibility for local managers.
But in addition, all Congress is saying is that you can't move more than 5% without our permission. It implies that IHS can go ask the permission to move as much as they wish. And I don't know that Congress has been really restrictive in giving that permission once it's been asked for.
Well, the problem is it hasn't been asked for. That's why Congress is more than a little irritated.
Does the RINCON decision oblige the Indian Health Service to equalize its beneficiary population?
Theoretical.
Yes and no. The written consultation required the Indian Health Service to come up with a plan for doing that. It wasn't a court order that required the Indian Health Service to provide equity in health care. There's a difference between the two. And IHS came up with a plan that was reasonably acceptable to the courts, and they created a system of redistributing funds within the program into a special appropriation that was agreed to by Congress called the Equity Health Care Fund.
Okay, what I really kind of wanted to get onto was trying to decide whether or not, first of all, this is really a problem. This is the kind of thing that the legislative staff have been hearing about, just the very kinds of things you're discussing. They've been hearing about the same things with state programs, by the way, and certainly from the private sector about the way health care is financed, you know, throughout the state. Everyone knows about the Patel study going on, and everyone should be fairly familiar with the bill that Thelma has been introducing provide health insurance program. And I'm sure I don't need to go through with you what the private sector's attitudes are about the state's role in health care financing. They're very varied, but take one kind of a strain. I think what we need to decide as a group is this a functional area that we want to try and grasp? And if so, what's going to come out of it, and what kind of legislative actions would we be suggesting that are in addition to those things that are already going on? Is this an area that you want to get into and try and do something about, or is this something that you want to kind of set aside and go on to at a later time, or not deal with in particular? Or if you want to deal with it, do we want to talk about what can the state do about IHS's financing mechanism problems? They can lobby, they could set up their own program, they could provide technical assistance, they could, you know, it's lots of small kinds of things. Those are the kinds of directions that we want to get headed on each of the problems. What could legislature do about the state programs? Well, there's probably a lot they could do. And what can they do about health care financing for all Alaskans? That's a fairly large issue that's presently being grappled with. Is this an area that you guys want to go into? And if so, does anybody have any ideas about what we might do about it?
I'm going to go back to Lisa's point, which is, I think that to a certain extent we've got the cart before the horse. I'm feeling some pressures. I'm feeling one that, yes, that's in reality something that's got to be dealt with, because whatever we decide to do has got to work, and financing is a big issue in whether or not it works. I'm also feeling a tremendous constraint in terms of time. I mean, I think what we're trying to do, if December is the deadline, I mean, we're in a lot of trouble. December of next year might be doable, but the other thing is, I guess I'd have to ask Thelma, what politically is the route we have to go here? It seems to me that what the group's got to do is get back to this policy question. Before we get into the financing and so on, we've got to sell somebody on what really is going to be the state's role here. What really is its policy toward the health of its citizens? And then, having said that, we can get into, do we leave the Indian Health Service alone, let the regions do battle with the Indian Health to come after? Seems to me there is some defining of what it is that we're going to do. It may be that, for instance, Commissioner Byrne, when she was in Nome, said, what I think the state ought to be doing is health education. That's, nobody's doing that. Well, if we limit our recommendation is to, in policy, that the state takes responsibility for health promotion, prevention, and education, then we don't have to worry about this, because the Indian Health Service isn't doing any of it, and we can just have a nice grant mechanism that goes to providers and we do it. If, on the other hand, we're saying that the state's responsibility is much broader, then the partnership becomes a very tough one, and these tough financing questions have to be dealt with. So I think we've got to begin with what really the state policy is first.
I agree
with Bill. I think to spend a lot of time here defining what that policy will be time well spent, because that's a critical issue. As I understand it, from the political standpoint, the climate is such that when people go in now for special bills for health or program or whatever the heck it is, mobile dental units or whatever, the question's being asked now, why is the state in this business in the first place? You know, it's unclear in the legislators' minds about why is this bill here? We're not in that business.
Right.
Maybe to define the business the state should be in.
Now, it frightens me to think that we're going to talk about financing mechanisms, because what's going to happen is we're going to let the state drift into, you know, again, a piecemeal routine. Well, yeah, we should do this because we once financed it. You still don't have a comprehensive statement addressing the issue and what the state's going to take as its responsibility. Then you talk about how you're going to finance.
However, what if the state, what if that, if that policy statement is developed, it's a page long, it's, I'm sure, from this group, fairly all-encompassing, and they say, no, we don't want to pass this policy statement. We don't, you know, we're going to continue to fund clinics in McGrath when the guy in McGrath wants it done, and that's all there is to it.
That's just what will happen. Extremely valid point. I mean, if you do that, that's fine. We can spend the next 2 months just defining a state policy, and we can draw up a bill and try and get the legislature to pass it next year. But that's putting all your eggs into that one basket, which is fine. If that's, maybe that should be the first priority. Maybe that should be what is done next year.
Well, that's why I was asking Thelma's input, because last year, I mean, to put a synopsis on history, last year 41 went in, and the Native community said, we're excluded from 41, no go, okay? This time we go in and we say, all right, the real issue this time around, folks, is the fact that the declining dollar for Native health care. Therefore, we've got to deal with this issue. We're going to get a backlash on the other side. We're going to get the non-Native saying, hey, we're not getting services either. I mean, at least the Native people have that special relationship, albeit bad. We have no relationship. So it seems to me, in order to avoid the thing being thrown out for one reason or another, we've got to put those things together.
Well, I think the other thing...
Otherwise, we're going to... All we're going to get in either case is, you know, we're going to put a clinic in McGrath that just built one last year, but nobody knew about it. I mean, we're going to continue to get that kind of thing.
But I think there's a philosophical point here, too. If they do that, you know, if there is a policy statement in the form of a legislative resolution or however, whatever form it has to be, that decision to throw it out and continue to fund pork barrel projects is a considered opinion then. You know, they, you know, right now I don't think a lot of people in the legislature realize that that's what they're doing. I'm sure they realize it, but to have to consider something reasonable and then reject it is an exercise. I think
but just because it's rejected doesn't mean it was considered. I mean, you know, that's kind of maybe oversimplifying the legislative process, because it doesn't mean that everybody there paid attention to it. Is all I'm saying.
Well,
you have a greater chance if you.
But if it's not submitted, you know, nobody paid attention to it.
Okay. Yeah.
I think we need to hear from the politicians, but
I think, well,
what approach you think?
Actually, let's hear from Dick, and then I will comment
on
that.
Okay, great.
Well, the other thing is that I think, you know, let's keep in mind the legislature changes from year to year, and if we spend a lot of energy putting a policy statement together, there's absolutely no guarantee that in 24 months with new members that anyone will pay the slightest bit of attention to it or use it to fund anything. That's simply a kind of a political reality. Now, the other problem is that when you start developing a policy statement, the first question is what are the cost implications? What's this thing going to cost?
implications.
And that's a very frightening thing for a legislator to sit down and say, well, wait a minute, now the state says it's going to do this, and you know, I have absolutely no idea what it would cost the state to put a policy like this together, and people will sit around the table and say, look, that could cost $50, $100, $200 million a year, any one of those elements. I think we ought to concentrate on very specific kinds of things that we can, in the final analysis, at least have some kind of a cost estimate on. We can say, next year the state should do this, and it's probably going to cost you guys this. And this is our top priority, and here's a second priority that you can do, but it's probably cost you this. I don't have much personal investment and spending a lot of energy, for instance, on financing mechanisms. I don't think that that's the right thing for this group to go into. That's just my own personal opinion. That's something that needs to be done at a later date, and I don't think the state's ready to swallow that yet. And we've had some personal experience with the Battelle study and with what's happened with Thelma's bill in the past. But anyway, that's my opinion. Any more?
Can there be some kind of a compromise? So we, for example, why not just make an informal policy statement? When you go up and talk to a legislature, you have to give them reasons why you're giving him a new bill, huh? And maybe we shouldn't be going after a legislative policy so much as having a good rationale in our heads why you know, why we're presenting this type of legislation, being able to pass it on. In other words, we can come up with a policy statement, not that it has to be adopted by the legislature, for the world to see why we think the state should be more involved in rural health care. And I think maybe that having an informal policy statement to back up our very specific line item legislative proposals, you know, I think people here would just be more happy with that.
Possibly. I would see something more
along
the line of...
In other words, you want us to put in a series, you know, submit a series of more rational bits and pieces.
Well,
I mean, that's the bottom line of what you're suggesting.
Not necessarily. I think we have to... It has to come from the problems that are there, and you need to go to the legislature and say, basically, look, Indian Health Service has been doing a really good job, and there are a lot of issues between Indian Health Service and their regional corporations, which we can or cannot get involved in, but basically they're being cut. And their services are already strained to the very breaking point. And additional cuts are going to begin to drop that system below the point which it has the critical mass to really provide care. On top of that, there are side issues. There are a lot of non-natives who are using the system more and more and more, so on and so forth. These are things that the state is going to have to pay attention to. There's a beneficiary population here that's in trouble, and the state has a traditional responsibility to step in and help when those kinds of things happen. In this particular area, there's also an opportunity to make systems changes that will affect a lot of non-natives as well. I think that's the kind of thing you take to them as a rationale. And you say, look, we have problems in transportation, and we have real problems in environmental health. And we think it's the responsibility of the state to make sure that everybody in rural Alaska has a decent environment, and that includes water, sewer, what have you. I don't mind, you know, taking it to that kind of level, but a sort of a general policy statement, I think, is a waste of our energy.
There's another
way you can go, which is to...
I wouldn't put it in writing.
I don't think the argument here is, you know, I think the argument here is that there ought to be these policy statements. Now, the mechanism of getting them done is another matter.
Well, that's,
I mean, if you want to tack on a policy statement relating to clean water to a build a water system at Hooper Bay, mm-hmm. fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a solution.
Accomplish
the
same thing.
I think if we put out a bill with legislative findings would be, you know, a policy statement saying we find this to be in need of being addressed and so forth. Then we can have, you know, a small bill like that. But I think also I agree with Dick that there will have to be specific legislation that will have to be sent out if this is the wish of this committee to be presented with the legislature on specific issues. That way, you know, you would have a set policy that is, you know, in a form of a bill. And I think that I can agree with that. I don't think we ever had a policy of that sort in this state. And in fact, I have some real specific, very strong ideas about health policy for the state. And I think we can address that very easily. But I think we should also address the issue of legislation, specific legislation for each package that we want to present to the legislature, and make that recommendation to the legislature. In, you know, and then whatever passes at one point, I have already said that there has been some renewed interest or new interest in this in healthcare. And I think that we can move on faster than it has been in the past. An item that kind of makes that I'm interested in right now is that, you know, how are we going to, if we're going to make the policy statements, if we are going to draw up some policy statement, and of course Dick came up with, you know, all these very good things, that findings, we can do that. And we can make the preliminary draft of that between now. Staff can do that, make the presentation next meeting. We can do that. And also, as we decide which of the legislative packages we want to present, then we can make a draft of that. And, you know, I think what we should do is bring it back to you and see if you agree on some of that draft that is being presented.
I'm reminded of the fact that the McGovern Bill of Rights, the Nutrition Bill of Rights, or minimum standards for nutrition, passed by the United States Congress, is almost never cited by anybody. And in fact, it's never been acted on by the government. These are a list of, I'm not sure how many there are, there are 15 or 20 minimum standards for nutrition. And if anything, the federal government has retreated from implementing these standards. So I'm not sure how much good it does to have in one bill a statement of policy.
Well, I think we're interested in getting the legislation passed, and how much of a policy thing, you know, if we can go to the legislators, Dick says, and say, we think the state should have a responsibility in meeting these needs that are caused by the cutbacks. If they're happy with that, that's fine. But if they say, hey, this gets into primary health care, and the state doesn't do that, we're into public health, and we're taking care of that already, and we're offering equal protection already under our present programs. This is a whole new radical area. Then you've got to come up with a rationale saying, well, the state cannot afford to stay out of primary care right now, because that's going to be a big problem, and it's going to, we're going to run into a lot more financial difficulty if we don't meet those now. That's what I'm thinking of in terms of having our arguments available someplace, even though we're not proposing them to be written down in some legislative documents.
Well, it seems to me that there is another alternative.
If you're happy with that, if you think all the legislators, if you think all the legislators are going to go for that, saying they have a responsibility to these people when their fundings are cut off to step in, that's fine if that works.
The other alternative, from my point of view, and this is just my own personal opinion, but if you really think that it's really important for the legislature, not for the department, but for the legislature, the policymakers in the state, to say that they feel a certain way towards health care in the rural areas, or native health care, or whatever you want to say, and for them to put that down in writing in a resolution, and if you feel that one of the really super important elements of that policy is that the state enter into a partnership with the federal government to provide care in the rural areas, then it would seem to me that you could have that be one of your recommendations, the policy statement, and then as your second recommendation, instead of saying, you should do this for transportation and this for alcoholism and this for dental health and this and this and this, to put it down to the level, which we all know really is reality, that it needs to be negotiated out and that process needs to be started. And that could be a recommendation that, and this is just my personal bias coming through, but it seems to me that might be just a really super practical way to go. Instead of saying, here's 20 different things you could do, in reality, we all know that if the partnership is ever going to work out, it's got to be negotiated and there have got to be legally binding agreements.
Why don't we go on and just talk about that then? Let's just leave the financing mechanisms aside and give you a little background on what Luann's talking about.
After lunch?
Is it lunchtime already?
Yeah.
The box lunches aren't here yet?
Yes, they are. Oh, well, let's eat them first.
Yeah.
And talk about this.
Okay. I think a good example is if you look at the public health
policy. We had a long 1 hour lunch, now way past the time, and of course, that's normal for 15 hours state business. That's what someone says. No, it's rather abnormal. We're not being prompt. But let's get back to Dick. I think he has a few more to add, a lot more to add to his presentation. So let's continue.
Continue on, eh? Okay.
We're old and more mature.
It's true. I think that if there's no objections, we'll kind of go on beyond financing mechanisms now and talk a little bit more about some of these health systems changes. Trying for the rest of the afternoon willow down the scope of what it is we're going to try and do for the study so we can have a little bit of direction for moving forward during the next month. One of the biggest problems that we've been hearing about from everybody, from the state, from the private sector, from Indian Health Service, and from the regional corporations, is a lack of coordination between federal, regional corporation, and state programs. Lots of overlapping, lots of people working at cross purposes, and a difficult time
in the flow of money back and forth, and accounting for it. Just, I think that the full range of issues that are tied to coordination of services. There are several things that we could do as a group to form recommendations to improve coordination of services. One of them would be, which has been suggested by a number of people, is for the state to fund an Office of Rural Health and to become the coordinator of services across the state. That would be something that would probably be within the department. It's an idea that we can talk about. Another idea, which has kind of come from Luann's visits in Washington, D.C., and a number of conversations with Jerry Ivey and Bob Sinyaki, and some folks from the state, is that maybe this is the time for the state and the federal government and the regional corporations to all sit down and negotiate out not only who's going to pay for what, but what kind of services are going to be available in the bush. The way that the Indian Health Service sees something like that working would be that it would be sponsored by the legislature and not the Department of Health and Social Services, and that it would have to include the congressional delegation, legislative representatives, the governor's office, the regional corporations, Indian Health Service, and the state. That's another idea that we could pursue. I think that what we could do in terms of the study would be maybe to put some time and energy into deciding what kind of a mechanism would be required for something like that, and what some of the problems attendant to it would be, and come back to you in a month and say, well, this kind of thing could work or it couldn't work. One of the things that's been suggested would be a blue ribbon commission or a coordinating council set up by the legislature specifically to study this issue, but more important, to actually be the facilitator for real negotiations to take place. Some of the things that have been suggested would be offhand things like the state getting completely out of the public health service business, public health nursing business, and contracting with regional corporations for those services. Indian Health Service, say, getting out of the transportation business and contracting its budgeted transportation money to give to the state, which the state would augment and set up its own transportation system. The Indian Health Service, for instance, phasing out of the satellite communications business and letting the state take full responsibility for communications with the health clinics in the bush through the new telecommunications system. Those kinds of large negotiation issues. The negative things that have been brought up about that idea are that the regional corporations would probably get the very short end of the stick in any of those kinds of negotiations. That's something you may or may not disagree with or agree with. I don't really know. Does anybody have any ideas about that kind of a, not only that kind of a alternative, but what kinds of things we could do? What kind of legislative actions could be taken to improve coordination of services between the various organizations? If we all agree it's a problem.
You know, whether people know it or not, or whether people like it or not, that's already happening.
That's correct.
Okay. And if you want to have some clout and policies about things like that, what you need to tell the legislature is that's what is virtually happening to every service unit, that we can no longer pay for those kind of things, and access of healthcare to the villages and to the village population is being limited. And, you know, I don't even think it's a point anymore. You know, it's virtually happening to every service unit.
True, but
yeah, I mean, that would be, you know, it's not even negotiable anymore.
Well, I think what we're talking about in terms of negotiation is, I think Bob Sinyaki put it just very well. He said, I suppose we're probably ready to bring our pot of the money to the table. And we'll bring it and say, here's $85 million, and here's what we spend it for. And, you know, the state brings its money to the table and says, here's what we spend, including alcohol and mental health. And the regional corporations have their part. And you say, okay, what basic package of services are we going to provide? Community health aid programs, so on and so forth, environmental health. And who's going to pay for what parts of those services, and what kinds of changes in legislation do we have to have in order to transfer money between these entities and set up this partnership, and either lock it into legislation or into a memorandum of agreement. And I imagine that would be everybody coming to the table with all their attorneys and knocking out some kinds of agreements.
Let me ask, if we go in that direction, Is that something that is negotiated first and gone to the legislature second, or do we go to the legislature and say, A, the state needs to take, in a policy statement, the state needs to take some basic responsibility for health services. If the services are deteriorating, as Os was describing, that means the state's got to take an active role. And then on having said that, the department or whoever begins this negotiations process. What happens first?
Well, I would say the first thing would probably happen is that the department probably would not be able to initiate these kinds of negotiations. I don't think that it would work if they did. I don't think that it would really be that appropriate, for, say, for the governor's office to do it. I would think, without talking to Thelma, the first step would be to go to the legislature and say, we need X number of dollars to fund a coordinating council or a blue ribbon commission or whatever you want to call it, the goal of which would be to enter into formal agreements with the Indian Health Service and the regional corporations regarding who's providing what services where and who's going to pay for what. And then, once that was completed, would be implied or without question that you would go back to the legislature and say, all right, here's what we've negotiated out. Here's how we're going to coordinate these resources. Here who has this responsibility for this service. And here's the residual. This is the leftover. This is the things that none of us had money for. And these are where the chronic problems still are after we've tried to do the best job we can to spend all the money that we all have available. And here are the things that need to be funded. So that would, I would see, as a double process, going to the legislature first for the money to be involved in that kind of thing and get their permission to do it, if they're even interested.
And maybe they think they already
did
that.
Another step, too.
Yeah. Maybe they think that's what this is.
It's part of the process, right?
It may also be an additional step, because some of the things that are agreed upon that are rational to do may require some legislative changes to accomplish, in which case involving both Congress and the legislature in that negotiation would hopefully smooth those things over, expedite them.
Part of the efforts that we've been in for the last couple of years have been trying to get memorandum of agreement between Indian Health Service and state in areas like alcohol, so we know who's doing what to whom, with what money, for what reason, mental health, and several others. And the commissioner has agreed and directed to be done, but that was in January of 80. And there, no one has felt compelled to see that it's accomplished. So the idea that it's going to be accomplished, but it just goes on and on and on, and with no one like the legislature forcing it to happen, is simply not going to come into being, because it's threatening to people down about middle level management in some of the state. I found that the state more reluctant to do those table work than the federal government has been.
The memorandum of agreement, though, doesn't carry the force of law, I don't think.
No, absolutely not. But we were trying to go that way, but without going the legislative route, trying to see mm-hmm. if we get internal. And we got great agreement, it just nothing ever happens with it. And we go back to the quarterly meetings, one coming up next week, and I'm sure it'll be mentioned that, oh yes, we need to get working on it, but then it's going to stop until the next meeting.
Are you recommending or proposing that that some kind of a body, coordinating body, be set up as a mechanism for this to happen?
I think that's another separate alternative, and that would be that this committee recommends that the state set up a coordinating body, you know, that would have multi responsibilities, and one of them would be to actually coordinate existing services by offering technical assistance and communications and setting up meetings and doing incidental planning things. Now that might be another separate option, much less energetic one. But no, I'm not really proposing that they would actually set up a coordinating council. I would think that any kind of a process like that would probably sooner or later result in something like that. I'm sure that coordinating council or blue ribbon commission that got together and set the negotiations up would want to continue to exist for some period of time to monitor how these things were working and to make changes in them over a period of time. And they may also want some kind of a ongoing evaluation and monitoring system that would require staff, so it might result in something like that. But that's just another alternative, one of any number that the state actions the state could take to just improve coordination of services.
Bill, the way I would respond to your comment is to say that the development of the policy sort of goes hand in hand with the actual hands-on negotiation of who's going to pay for what and who's going to provide what, and that the role of this body, if it was going to develop policy and then make a series of recommendations, might be to say, here's the policy, Now, you know, we all know that us sitting around a table aren't the people that are going to actually decide who's going to pay for what, but that we need to set up a negotiating team on both sides to figure the particulars out that the policy would stem from.
And one of the difficulties I guess I'm seeing is that if we go that route and what we seek out of the next session is the money to set up that negotiating team and fund it and staff it, then we're going to be stuck with the same kind of bind we have right now where we've got 2 months to get something done, to get it on the table at the legislature. It seems to me that if all we get out of the next session is the money to do that, then we'll be in the same bind of trying to get something done in sufficient time when the following legislature can deal with it. Mm-hmm. And we keep extending the time while the problem with the cutbacks goes on. So
that's a real valid
point. I don't know if there's any way that the 100,000 can, you know, get us to that point, or there can be some interim increase in that without going through a major statement on the part of the legislature. In other words, if you're saying that the negotiations can take place before the legislature makes a statement, or the state makes a statement that they're even willing to enter that we can actually just begin it, then maybe we ought to be beginning it. Otherwise, we're going to be 3 legislatures away before something is out there helping people, as opposed to only 2 legislatures away.
It doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily mutually exclusive with doing other kinds of things with pressing problems. Mm-hmm. It's really, you know, it can be just limited to trying to improve the coordination with existing funds. Doesn't mean we couldn't also say that in addition the state should fund X number of clinics, for instance, or
can we, is there some way of doing what Bill says and just initiate the process? I think that's what he's talking about.
I don't know what's involved in the process. I haven't really given any thought at all. Maybe some of the other have.
Well, that's kind of what, you know, what we were sort of asking you is, if you like that idea, we will go back and see if the process can be initiated. You know, we can talk to the legislators, and we can also talk to Helen Byrne and go back to Jerry Ivey and say the advisory committee is really behind this idea, but we won't have any force if we don't have your support, is I guess what I'm trying to get across. I don't think we'll get very far if we don't say, well, the advisory committee likes this idea and they want us to pursue it. That's sort of the way I view it.
Davies? As someone who tends to be violently opposed to creating more committees and councils, it's just a hang-up I have, because this state seems to proliferate them. We kept talking about a coordinating council. We have a statewide health coordinating council. Would not this be something that they could address in an already existing body? I'm not quite sure what they do offhand, but certainly there's a lot of committees you can never figure out, let's face it. But wouldn't this seem like something productive that they could get into? I mean, they exist, they've got a budget, they have time frames they can deal with.
Well, you're talking about who has the power to negotiate these things. Do we have the power to
get people together? You know, like Dave said, they've been saying we should do it. No one ever gets together, and then we talk, well, let's get a panel together so that we can talk some more. And I'm saying, you've got the statewide health coordinating council. It's got staff. It's got funding. This isn't health coordination. What is? Why aren't they initiating the action to get the state and IHS and the private sectors together? They're the statewide body.
Sure, that's
let's not
sure.
create another one, folks.
Sure, but I don't mean to dominate the conversation, but the point that I think we're trying to get across is that it wouldn't just be coordinating services. It would be negotiating out legally binding agreements as to who's going to pay for what. And I don't think that the statewide coordinating council has the power.
Yeah, but what Bill just said was we want to avoid going through 3 legislative sessions. And what Dave was saying was it's already been 3 years of everyone saying we should and no one doing it. I see the SHIC as the state agency that can take the initiative, get the negotiations or discussions started, at least delineate who says who's responsible for what, and then get to the legislature instead of going there and asking for a council to be funded. So that you've got the mechanism.
What I hear Lee saying is for SHIC to provide the staff support and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. to set this up and make the arrangements and whatever else. The actual people who will be doing the negotiations are the ones that can do it.
Okay.
Like the director of Indian Health Service,
Stephen's
office,
whoever. But they're the ones that can
start
delineating who's saying this is my finance. I mean, I would assume that's what they're there for.
I'd like to request that this committee go on record, motions of what, to Ms. Buchholz, director of staff, to find the best options for accomplishing what we've just been talking about and give those to us at the next meeting. And perhaps even ask someone from the State Coordinating Council here to explain what their jurisdiction is and limitations are.
You're on, Gordon.
Gordon, go ahead.
Well, I'm on the ALS Coordinating Council. And the problem with the ALS Coordinating Council is that they were run by federal rules and regulations that really don't fit Alaska. They may fit the South 48, and it's a good idea, but in Alaska, it really doesn't fit it. Right now, all they do, in my opinion, and it's very important, is plan, you know. And some of the plans and priorities are really out of sync with the rest of the state. For instance, they have not, they don't think it's in their jurisdiction to take a look at Indian Health Service and a whole bunch of other things like that. And there's a lot of people on there that are really, really frustrated. What needs to happen is that there's going to be any health coordinating council. It should be a health coordinating council that really fits the state of Alaska. And I think if you recommend to them that they look into it, you'll never be able to get it done because, number one, they don't have the staff. They're being cut back. Number two, they're being phased out as of next year. There'll be no funding available. And I just don't think that they do that. I think they're having a meeting. I think we're having a meeting on November 20th here in town. And be more than willing to bring it up at that time if you wish.
I wouldn't see this making any differences in the way health services are delivered. I wouldn't see it as health planning, frankly. I don't think that we should try and pass it off as that. This would simply be a forum for good hard cash negotiations, and I don't think it would necessarily be a vehicle to make sweeping changes in the way healthcare is delivered and financed. It would just be trying to solve the problem that everyone perceives as lack of coordination between the various kinds of services, and that includes very basic things like the public health nurses out in places not working with the Indian Health Service. You know, those kinds of things. I wouldn't see it as an all-encompassing health planning kind of an action.
In terms of describing needs and services?
Yeah, I'm sure they would do a lot of things that weren't very sensible, just because that's the money they could shift from one place to the other, or it would be too difficult to, for instance, to change the way the federal budget is line item for community health aids. There's going to be a lot of those kinds of considerations that would result in probably pretty much the same system.
Okay, Danny had the floor now.
Well, I was going to just add to what Gordon was saying, that the SHIP was created by a federal law that specifically excluded the Snyder Act activities, and that's why they're really not interested. It's not interested as a matter of record in this sort of thing. There is no staff, by the way, for the SHIP. There never has been a staff. The SHIP, or the State Health Planning and Development Agency, has acted something like a staff sometimes, but by no means were they ever dependable, and there seemed to be no legal connection between the SHIP and the SHIC as far as providing an ongoing staff relationship. That's been a source of tremendous frustration to the SHIC, is that they've not had a staff that they could depend on.
And I get the feeling, too, that there really is no commitment to health coordinating within the department, State Department.
Yeah, and that would be a problem.
Bill?
Yeah, I think it's a double-edged sword. Having been on the SHIC, I think that the members who have committed themselves in terms of the time to go through this boring process are very interested in doing this. This is what they would have preferred to have done from day one. And I think they're knowledgeable, by and large, and they're a representative group. There are a lot of things going for that group, I think, in terms of interests and background and so on. So on the one hand, I say, yeah, we should finally give these people the opportunity to do something. Which this would be, because many times in the deliberations they really wanted to get into the Indian Health Service coordinating issue. The Native corporations have taken exception to these groups having any authority over them, and it's in the law that they will not have the authority, so they've backed off. But personally, the members have a lot of commitment to looking at these things. Same thing with the Coast Guard on Kodiak. I mean, they're really into these duplication problems. I think the political reality, excuse me.
The rural areas, are they sufficiently represented on that body that they get a fair shake and any kind of any discussion?
Yes and no. I mean, the priorities in the state health plan are rural priorities. So if you look at the end products, I would say that the rural interests have been represented well, because the plans, just as at the HSA level, even though the HSAs in some cases have been dominated by urban groups, they nonetheless highlight the rural problems. And the problems speak for themselves, regardless of where the voting power is. The difficulty on the other side, and the reason I agree with Elise, the frustration of proliferating these groups. I mean, the HSAs are sitting around saying, what is this? We're sitting here dying, and the legislature's off, you know, funding the Battelle study and funding us as a group and providing money for it, but they won't give us a nickel. And we've given 5 years, 6 years, 7 years of our life to this process. I really sympathize with those people because they have knowledge that does need to be tapped. The problem is the department. And that's the political reality. The department doesn't support that group. It could have, regardless of the federal law, it could have mandated that this group look into these issues. There's nothing prohibiting it. But the department is not interested in them having this role. They're not interested in health planning. So that's the difficulty. We would have to work through the department to use that council, and working through the department is the problem.
But what is the goal? Is the goal to do more planning and coordination, or is the goal to sit down and negotiate out who's going to pay for what based on planning and coordination?
Either way, the planning has to come first.
That's
right. But we could, what I was going to say is that, but we could utilize the existing planning agencies in the process of the negotiation. But if you want to create a forum to negotiate, you know, that needs to be spelled out, that we, you know, we're just not proliferating councils to coordinate again.
Which existing planning agencies?
Well, I'm just assuming that these agencies are going to continue to find funding, and maybe that should be one of our recommendations, that they should continue to have funding from the state.
Well, but the policy has to be changed so that all health facilities can be looked at rather than just some.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically what we're doing is going underground in some way. I mean, we're working with state people, you know. Well, I don't think we ought to let this be known. You know, but you know, we're basically going underground. I mean, I'm meeting with Janice Cole. You know, we're talking about, geez, what's going to happen when all these supplies are going to leave the Indian Health Service? What are we going to do? Is the state's going to have to pick up something, or they'll have political pressure from the Bush caucus or somebody to get involved? We're basically going underground. You know, I mean, meeting. There's got to be a beginning somewhere, and we're doing it. You know, but whether it's official or not, but I think that's how you get things going. That's how you get. I mean, if we can do that, then there's going to have to ultimately be a point where negotiations are going to have to occur. And, you know, that's what's...
Well, I think what we probably need is to look into the two agencies that are not coordinating or do not have the power to coordinate, and figure out how to tap the resources. My feeling, though, is that if we are going to work on a project such as this, maybe we could redefine the responsibilities so that they won't run short of, you know, of their specific duties. For instance, if they want to get involved with native healthcare, you know, tackle that issue. If they want to involve with urban healthcare, you know, be free to do that. But from what I have, and this is probably the reason why I've never been really quite sure myself what each of those agencies did. I get their brochures and the reports quite often and browse through them, but I it's never very clear to me what each one does. And maybe because of that, and I'm not speaking for the legislature, but because of that, I guess the legislature has never really funded them to the full extent of their that they deserve. And if you say that the department has never really been interested in what they do, well, then no one was responsible for them. They were just running off on their own, and nobody paid attention to their product. Maybe
right.
That is a basic problem in this area. So now, why are we here? Well, maybe we can redefine some of those things that are missing in other agencies and other committees, and maybe... I don't think this is the committee necessarily, to be involved in this coordinating project that Dick is talking about, but certainly we can put, you know, our best foot forward and say these are the basic specification for that particular council or coordinating committee. Not that we are creating another one. I think that we could strengthen whichever we need to strengthen, but definitely there's a need to have a diversity of responsibility rather than just we do this because it's federal funded, we do that because it's state funded, there's no coordination.
You know, maybe we should take David's suggestion or motion and try to find the quickest way to get to the process of this negotiating that Dick is talking about, you know, without having to set up a new body of some kind, and at the same time see what we can do to strengthen the other coordinating processes that are supposed to be going on, as, you know, Thelma says, by maybe redefining responsibilities for them so that they can get involved in Indian health care and things like that. In other words, I think we're talking about maybe several different levels of coordination here. Dick wants to get the decision makers together, and maybe that's a very simple thing, huh? Maybe that's a lot simpler than we can imagine as far as making a few phone calls and getting them to come to a long meeting with their attorneys and start dealing. But I think maybe we've got the... I think we can look into that and see what's...